Welcome to For the Love of Conversation, the podcast that grew out of 3 Minute Storyteller, where we believe conversations connect us and social change begins with the stories we tell. At 3 Minute Storyteller, we share digital stories, video snippets of intimate, messy, expansive conversations with a wildly eclectic bunch of artists, scientists, leaders of all stripes, all who are legendary change agents. Some you may know, and hopefully many you don't. This podcast is the opportunity to bring you into the full conversation. I'm Shannon Mannin, along with my husband Mike and our VW bus Scarlett, who we've outfitted into an awesome mobile storytelling unit. We invite you into the full conversation with us. We're so glad you're along for the ride. Tevin East is the creative powerhouse behind Holy Fool Arts, a theatrical production company whose offerings include the Carnival de Resistance. What drew me to the carnival is that for all of our talk these days about resistance, I'm longing for places to imagine what kind of world we want to create. Where are the spaces to cultivate a vision that propels, fuels, and grounds our resistance? Tevin is a thoughtful, tender, and immensely talented all-around creative force. With a humble passion, she's attracting a growing community of artists, activists, and spiritual leaders to the carnival to experiment with the creation of a new world through their month-long residencies in cities throughout America. In building community through the collective prayer of the carnival, Tevin says that they're tossing out the notion that they're attempting to get things right. They're simply attempting to work together. Our conversation begins here with Tevin describing how her family nurtured her creative spirit.
Well, I certainly have had a really active imagination throughout my life and feel like that excitement of dreaming up what might be possible, concocting plans, building forts, building scavenger hunts, creating things for my little brother. Also, my parents gave me a lot of positive reinforcement for all of the performance that I did for them as a child. So my little brother and I did a lot of performing, crafting acts, which was lots of fun and kept me on my trajectory probably.
Mm. Yeah, so we just came out of a really beautiful supper together with the community. So one of the things one of your artists mentioned to me was the bonding that you guys did in your camp prior to putting on the production. There was such a synergy and such a bond that was created. And then when you got to the city to start doing your performing, inevitably people spread and, you know, kind of go a little bit fractured a little bit because they're spread out over a large geography. But each time you hold your hands in song and prayer, it reignites or plugs you back into that current of love and connection that you all shared. And I wasn't expecting to necessarily talk about that particular moment, but it was just, it was a real symbol of what you create together. It was a very clear feeling that it was very tangible. So I was just wondering how would you begin to talk about the community element that your work is inspiring?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the early years of the Carnival Project, I think we were so focused on the output, on the productions that we are bringing together. After our first experiment with the carnival, I think it registered how much of a formational experience this is for the crew itself. And we started developing these trainings that weave both theological reflection, anti-oppression training, ceremony, rehearsal, performance training, all of these different pieces, so that we are not just equipped to put on this artistic event, but to really embody it with this spirit of unity and as sort of a collective prayer for the community. It's a real gift. And it draws folks, the carnival draws people who are eager to be bridging worlds, who might often find themselves on the margins or on the edges of the arts world or of the faith world, or feeling compelled towards social engagement and or direct action or activism, yet are feeling potentially some of the shortcomings of that activity. So it's people who are seeing that there is something important about bridging these worlds of art, activism, and faith. Mm-hmm. Mm. And are looking for others who can figure out that dance with them.
And is it true that your own hunger and longing to find a tribe of artists to create with inspired the carnival?
Oh, very much so.
How can you talk about that?
I think all of us are longing for places to celebrate resonance and to feel accompaniment. All of us need this. And the challenge of loneliness is pervasive. We are all struggling with how to make sense of the complex challenges that we're facing. And it is impossible to do that alone. We need each other to build each other up. We need each other to gain perspective on the issues. And so I think that my journey is just a really universal journey, in that I was attempting to sort of follow my calling and do my bridge building work, looking at these intersections of art activism and faith. Yet I did not know who exactly my collaborators were. And I was longing for that. And I was touring, and I was also bemoaning the challenge of eating well or taking care of myself, how hard it was to do the work by myself, and felt that if I had that community, that it would be easier for us to do the self-care, have an ecological mindfulness in how we are embodying and embodying the project, and pull off the cultural vitality and performance quality that I was wanting. So yes, I was longing for that, and when we first put the call out for to amass a carnival crew, I didn't know if anyone was going to be able to do it. It's a huge investment of energy. The carnival crew members are giving a full month of their time to this, so it is an incredible investment. So, yet people come because they're longing so much for this type of experiment and this opportunity to.
And the people that come, you know, as I was preparing to talk to you, I imagined, you know, who would take this daring risk to drop out of their life, step out of their life for a pretty decent amount of time, to sleep on the floor in a strange city. You know, it's wild, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I imagine how much their hearts had to be broken to answer that call. What in a universal breaking, as you said, like it's like folks who have been broken, that your heart has to be allowed to break to do something so courageous. So I wondered if you could talk about these people, you know, these performers, who they are, why are these artists and these storytellers and these performers and these circus people, like, what is their role? And you know, help us, like, get into the anatomy of that.
Yeah, I appreciate your intuitive sense of people's grief that draws them into this process. And I certainly feel like that is one aspect of it, that we all need to grieve and we don't have safe spaces to do that work and to metabolize our pain and our grief in a healthy and generative way. Mm-hmm. And so those who are carrying grief and are needing to a safe space for it to sprout new life. Some of these folks are, all across the board. We have performers who are interested in their art being more directed on towards social change. We have activists who are seeing the those places of spiritual dryness within activist communities who need a place to be spiritual and to name the theological underpinnings of their activism, or who need creative a place for creative embodiment. You know, Sarah Thompson was the director of Christian Peacemaker Teams for several years and is a tours internationally doing trainings on peace and justice, and she returns to the carnival so that she can wear her wildest colors and allow, you know, the freak flag to fly. That is the same for Grace Ahern, who is a community organizer in Charlottesville. Then we have folks who are really experimenting with alternative lifestyle experiments, looking at being more rooted in ecological alternatives. England is our village organizer. She is a farmer from Kansas who lives in a very conservative part of the country, and community that is beloved to her. And this is a chance for her to bring her gifts and to serve the artistic and the social justice and ecological justice elements that she does not have as much opportunity in Kansas to serve. We have, JD and Lindsay were touring with this Caravan Theater Company, which is a theater company that tours by boat and performs off the deck of the boat to folks in the port. And it's a social justice, ecological justice oriented theater troupe. And I think they were drawn to the carnival in part because of the degree to which we're focusing on that formational piece, on creating a space where everybody can help shape this community dynamic, this community experiment together. Mm.
You know, right? It seems like an intimate family. Like I think what's so striking internally in the community that you're building, there's all these layers of the community that you're building through the carnival. But it's really a microcosm of what we can be, and it's that embodying that you talk about so beautifully. For both the audience who's observing it and connecting with you, and the artists and performers and the crew that live it, and for the partner organizations as well, I wonder about like the alchemy of this microcosm that comes together for this brief period of time and then goes back to their lives. Is there softening? What would you talk about in terms of that alchemic reaction, that transformation? Mm-hmm. What do you see? Mm-hmm.
We certainly have a sense that information is not going to be the thing that changes the world, that coming together and getting downloads on like what the tough challenges are and what programs or solutions or alternatives need to be adopted is not going to ignite that, ignite our responses and our senses of urgency. That really it has to do with transformative relationship. It has to do with embodiment, play, ceremony, and celebration, that we are experimenting with how to draw these pieces into our work together. So when we were doing our workshop on challenging systemic racism and paths towards collective liberation, we integrated some clowning work into it, and we integrated some theater of the oppressed work, and we integrated some ceremony into that space, because it is not, because we believe that is an important part of the piece, mm-hmm. is to not just stay in this cerebral space, but to really experiment with getting it in our bodies. Also, we want to toss out the notion that we are attempting to get things right. Mm-hmm. We are simply attempting to work together. Mm-hmm. We call parts of this project, we call it our holy game. And that is, it's not a game where someone wins or you're even focused on winning. It's a game that you win just by playing along. That we are believing that just by leaning in and participating and showing up, that the Holy Spirit's going to do some work on us and come and be wind in our sails.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your name. So Carnaval de Resistance. And resistance is such a word that gets a lot of play right now in our cultural space, but I feel like it needs makeover. Resistance, the way mm-hmm. I hear it talked about in the public space, is very much against and against and against, mm-hmm. and there's a real creative tension in how you guys define it. You've got the kind of theatrical cultural echo demonstrations, and they're calling us to something better. It's a real imaginative, generative piece. At the same time, you really are focusing on breaking down systems of oppression and environmental justice. And there's demonstrations and rallies and trainings to break down anti-racism. And these things are married together. And I feel like maybe sometimes do they work in tension with each other? Not opposite, but just inform each other, because they're usually separate in the rest of the culture. But it feels like inside of this tension, there's this really fertile soil, and you live right in that. So I was wondering how you talk about resistance right now. What does that mean for you? What is, when you chose that name, what are the aspects of, how do you think about resistance? Mm-hmm.
The Carnaval de Resistance is an experiment in bridging faith, art, and activism that exists as annual residencies that spring up in different parts of the country. When we come together and the Carnaval crew comes together, We produce arts carnivals that include big theatrical productions and carnival midways with games, sideshow acts, etc. We also live together and experiment with sustainable alternatives in our Eco Village demonstration project. And throughout our residency, we partner with different local organizations to educate and uplift local grassroots resistance efforts and community resilience endeavors. The name Carnival de Resistance is somewhat redundant because carnival in and of itself, it has a cultural traditions across the globe and is a merging of cultural traditions from European colonial settlers to African displaced peoples on this continent to indigenous peoples on this continent who saw this carnival tradition, which is a Christian festival, saw within it a place to preserve cultural memory and to speak truth to power and to mock the powers and to embody an alternative at the same time. The through lines, the themes within carnival traditions, carnival history, is that it is both subverts the dominant order and embodies and demonstrates an imagination for an alternative way for a community to be together. It is both transgressive or subversive and incarnational.
Awesome.
And these things work together. Like, we just had an awesome sermon this past Sunday at church where we were talking about destruction and creation together, that there is a holy call within both of these, and it does not work for us to attempt to abolish current systems or deconstruct current forms of oppression without having imagination and having people seeding the new new systems, new ways of being together. And yeah, it's that the both and work.
Because I'm thinking about, you know, a longing I have that I feel is, and that I feel collectively and personally, is this new, this building of the new. It feels so destructive right now. Mm-hmm. And everything's crumbling and we don't know what's new. So it's a question, but all we have are each other to come together and think about what it could be. Mm-hmm. And so I think about when you create the artistic vision of this, how much do you try to paint, frame out of what you want it to be, this heaven on earth, this sangha, this new community, and how much, you know, and obviously how much do you let the spirit of the people and bring it in their own imagination, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Because I feel mm-hmm. like your community that you've created mm-hmm. is it. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind mm-hmm. of built in the microcosm of mm-hmm. your crew that you create.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, this project, because it's so multidimensional, there are different parts of the project that would that demonstrate different types of criticism or critique, or in different places, different types of suggesting alternatives. So within our artistic offerings, within the productions, more than anything, it's about demonstrating our sort of a ceremonial reckoning with our grief mm-hmm. and a theological wrestling with the relevance of the old stories to our current ecological crisis. And the shows do not present solutions or programs except for us just to create space within ourselves for both the grief and the hope and the longing, and to fight that tendency to fall into apathy or denial.
Or cynicism
or
despair.
Cynicism or despair, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So the shows do some of that work, the sort of spiritual psychological work. The Eco Village is a place where both the crew is attempting to embody and try out new practices and see what happens to us as we try out these new practices, and to share those with others as a way of demonstrating a sort of experimental playing with sustainable alternatives. And then our community organizing work is really about celebrating and amplifying the work that's happening locally and enabling our project to sort of shine a creative light on what already exists and give it some encouragement and some juice and support the collaboration between different groups that may not normally come to the table together. Mm.
You know, the getting into the grief and hope that you've talked about, you know, I'm wondering, you know, you set the secret space for both of them to emerge. You know, I want to talk a little bit about how the grief and hope are connected, that inextricable connection. And also, as you do this in public, what does that look like? How is it to grieve in public and have hope collectively? Like,
there's more and more wonderful work being done on grief and places for grief ceremonies to happen and for elder wisdom to enter in and guide folks through grief processes. So we're not the pioneers or new on offering something new. And I would say in traditional cultures, grief has a honored seat at the table more often than in our world presently. There is not space to grieve. And we are all sick and burdened with that inability to grieve well. I would even suggest that so many of our pathologies and so many of our interpersonal challenges or burnout comes from an inability to grieve well. Because right on the other side of grief, when you grieve well and you're able to do it with others, is our love of beauty, our love of connection, our love of each other, our love of the earth. And it is that love that is bubbling up when we're also feeling that pain over the destruction or the deterioration of relationships or the loss of loved ones. So what does it look like? I have encountered folks who have come to experience the shows who are overwhelmed with emotion and relief to have a space where grief can be honored, where they are invited through that process with us. And we hold our grief in a very strong way within our productions, but every production ends with a live drum and dance party. So there is a cathartic and joyous release and response to that deep, heavy work that we've done together.
One of the things you've said, I'm just going to quote something, is you said, there is a spiritual poverty in our social and environmental movements the tools within policy work. This is coming out of your work in environmental, when you worked specifically in environmental policy, kind of in that on that side of mm-hmm. things, not on the artistic side. There's a spiritual poverty in our social and environmental movements. The tools within policy work are really depressing. The system is created to prevent change. Statements and reports and studies are not changing the world. Information is not what we need. I felt this new clarity that art gets into our system in a different way. It can affect our imaginations and our perceptions and can be a midwife for transformation in a way that a lot of things can't. And I like that because you talk about, you know, the role of, the importance of policy, the importance of, you know, that type of information. Mm-hmm. But what, you know, kind of unpack all of that for us. Like, what did you learn and what did you feel the need to come back to art for?
Well, just to bow to the work that has been going on for decades, Joanna Macy is one who has supported many through that building up of spiritual vitality and resilience in the face of the emotional work and the challenge of doing movement work. And she recognizes that there is the damage control work, and I might put policy reform in that camp of mitigating the suffering that is within this world with policies that will shift the tide and do less harm. And then there are educators and folks who are teaching about alternative ways, and the most profound alternatives that I have seen come from direct relationship from grassroots community organizing work, where people's lives are changed because of the relationships that are happening, and the sense of being cared for and supported within a community setting. And then there are the
And what's so hopeful about that is that's the part that you think is the most transform. You found to be the most transformative, and that's the part we all have the closest access to.
Exactly, and we still need damage control because there is so much damage being done, and that and it's heaping up on top of us. So we need folks to throw monkey wrenches into the gears, and we need folks to massage our city policies and state and larger policies such that they are taking into the account the experience of the most vulnerable in our society. There are people who have done advocacy work for a long time who are doing it with a lot of thoughtfulness. But we are gonna be in grave danger if we think that voting once or twice a year for our policy makers is going to do the change that is needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to talk about, you've talked about bridging art activism and faith. Mm-hmm. And we understand each of those things in separate buckets. And when you put them together, whoa, it gets confusing. We don't, what do we do with this? There's no blueprint. So, and one without the other leaves something it's not as strong. You know, there's like a strengthening that comes from all three. But there's not a lot of examples of it. So I want to talk about your life as a spiritual artist, using your prophetic imagination to inspire your art and your activism, using this Judeo-Christian lens, this faith to inspire our new world. You know, you don't hear that kind of language a lot. You don't hear of play and, you know, juggling and arts, you know, unicycles and juggling in the houses of worship. So tell me about your, I don't know, tell me about how that, how that moves in you. What is the power of that spiritual underpinning to your art and your activism and your faith?
There's probably lots of folks out there who have a sense of the challenge that comes when there is a chasm between these worlds, who understand the burnout that comes when you don't have spiritual support or faith convictions or a sense of purpose within your activism. And I've certainly seen a lot of stuff out in the art world that is somewhat cut off from a conversation with a larger world about what the community needs. So the sort of bizarre. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. So there's
art for art's sake.
Yeah. Exactly. Art for art's sake has its challenges. Activism without the spiritual underpinnings, or faith convictions, or creativity, certainly has its challenges. The thing that I have been distilling for myself in the why am I bridging these worlds, I have, if I'm being most honest, it is not to convert artists, to tell them that they need to adopt any belief systems or any doctrinal framework, or to tell them what their source of inspiration needs to be. It's not to connect with the artists or the activists and explain to the activists how they need to be more creative. Really, I am holding this question: can the faith world, can our communities of faith be light, be a place for retreat and support through the storms that we are facing with our ecological and our social crises and our cultural crises? Can the faith world be relevant and a place for inspiration? This is important these days, as there are many dying churches and there's many there are many churches in going through an identity crisis or trying to figure out how to pass the torch on to the next generation. And I believe the more these faith communities can be relevant to our ecological and social crises, the more hope we have for weathering the storm and maintaining our humanity and our connection to our deepest sense of what is valuable. And I also believe that the faith world has a lot to learn from artists and activists in order to have both the creativity and the courage to live into these challenging times, to bring inspiration in these challenging times. Mm.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Tevin East, founder of Holy Fool Arts and director of the Carnival de Resistance. To learn more about Tevin and her many creative productions, check out 3 Minute Storyteller's webpage, 3ms.co, or our social media platforms, at 3 Minute Storyteller on Facebook and Instagram, and at 3min Storyteller on Twitter. And while you're there, please subscribe to our mailing list so you never miss a story from us.